Greetings, welcome, hello everybody. It's time for the last three guys to do a podcast. Your latest and greatest podcast covering the world of sports and Atlanta in particular. I'm John Mordo.
Daniel Bolton.
Leon Bro.
Thank you very much for joining us here. We're talking college football because, well, that's what's starting up on Thursday. And we got a big contest in the metro Atlanta area. Might be flying a little bit under the radar, what with Georgia starting against Austin Peay, Georgia Tech against Alcorn State. But Thursday night, it's going to be the start of a crosstown rivalry, maybe. It's going to be the Georgia State Panthers against the Kennesaw State Owls. And we've got people representing both ends of the spectrum. I thought we could get them on together to talk this out, but unfortunately, I don't have that capability as of yet. Hope to get it very soon. So, joining us without any further ado from 247sports.com, Ben Moore. He's their Georgia State beat writer. Ben, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, John. Good to talk to you guys.
All right, good to talk to you.
How you doing, man?
All right, good to talk to you too, Ben. Let me ask you this. First of all, we kind of got into this a little bit when we were off air, but Georgia State and Kennesaw State, kind of a little bit lower, but they've got a good program. Which program is this more important for, Georgia State or Kennesaw State?
I think it's Kennesaw State, to be honest. This is basically their senior season, if you will. You know, only a couple years in, basically, of existence. Georgia State, this is season number 9. They've been an FBS program for 5 seasons, and we're coming off a bowl win against Western Kentucky. Really validated first-year head coach Sean Elliott. In his second year, they're looking to basically take that next step and really move forward and really kind of contend for a conference title. To be fair to Kennesaw, they're the new kids on the block and certainly had a great season in 2017. But more positive can be gained with a Kennesaw State win than from a Georgia State win necessarily, because FBS teams, to be frank, are supposed to beat FCS teams. You have 22 extra scholarships. You have more talent at the FBS level than the FCS level, and certainly from an in-state perspective and perception, I think Kennesaw State, it's a big game for them and a big game for their fans. It's been shown, but they've been able to gobble up plenty of the tickets, and it should be a rocking atmosphere at Georgia State Stadium this Thursday.
Yeah, it should. And also, another question. Kennesaw State, they've been able to get their program up and running and be successful in a very quick period of time. What do you attribute that to?
I think they have the right coach, certainly. Randall Hannon came from Georgia Tech, was an offensive mind for Coach Paul Johnson there. They run and they recruit specifically to their system. They run a triple option very similar to what Paul Johnson's run over there on the flats. I think the biggest thing in the 2017 season really was just how strong that team was defensively. They led FCS in turnover margin. In their 10 wins against FCS opponents, they were plus 17. So when you're turning the ball over consistently, giving it over to a potent triple option offense, which eats up the clock. That's another thing as well. They were top 10 in the FCS last year in time of possession. So as we, folks that follow college football, if you face a triple option team and you don't slow them down, they continue to churn and burn, and the clock just keeps going. And if you don't make hay on your offensive possessions, you're in deep trouble behind the eight ball. And credit to their staff for building, certainly the right way, and they're continuing to grow in the state of Georgia.
Hey, Ben, it's Daniel.
Ben, can you hear Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, hey, go.
How you doing, Ben? So, listen, I'm an employee of Georgia State. I'm an alum of Georgia State. So, of course, the atmosphere and the culture of Georgia State, I get to see it a lot. But what I want to know is, what are your expectations, your personal expectations of the team this year?
Yeah, just really wanted to see how many more steps forward this program can take. I think that's the biggest question mark you had. Detractors, folks that looked at the 2017 and said, yes, it was a successful season, 7-5. You didn't beat a team with a winning record. I think that's a big step forward too. You have opportunities to beat some of the top teams in the league this year in Appalachian State. To try to go up and beat Troy, teams that are expected to compete at the top of the conference. I think that's the opportunity. Quite honestly, you have probably the best opportunity for a Power 5 conference win this year against an NC State team, also facing a very strong Memphis team on the road. So, really trying to see what the Panthers can do when they, take that next step up in level of competition. Of course, it starts Thursday night with a strong Kennesaw State team. But Not necessarily to say they're overlooking this, but there's bigger fish to fry than the Owls on the schedule. The goal basically is to try to aim for that conference title and get to the first ever Sun Belt Championship game. So, that's been the goal for Coach Elliott, trying to find playmakers. It's an extremely young roster. So, when you have a young roster, you're going to have ups and downs on the 13 scholarship seniors on the team right now. There's going to be a ton of freshmen and sophomores to play, not only Thursday night, but throughout the season. So, excited to see what they can bring and, really see if some of these talented players that the coaching staff has brought in the 17 and 18 class contribute and get on the field.
Good answer. Thank you. One more question. As I look at the schedule here, now, of course, the obvious is that team down in Statesboro. I'm not worried about that, okay? give me another game that our Georgia State fans watch out for within the Sun Belt Conference.
I think Appalachian State, they've been the gold standard, quite honestly, and, have really, really worn out Georgia State up and down on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. Georgia State hadn't scored a single point up in Boone. It's been kind of a big-time struggle for the program up there with so much turnover, especially on the offensive side of the ball for the Mountaineers. This may be the opportunity that Georgia State can do and kind of stand up and say that. What's kind of interesting about the football roster and really athletic department as a whole. Charlie Cobb came from App State, who's the athletic director, as well as Sean Elliott was a coach and player up at App State. So there's a ton of ties there. There are several members of the staff who have ties to Appalachian State as well. To go back and knock off the Mountaineers this season would certainly be a huge springboard opportunity to knock them off. But with closely probably followed by Troy. I think the Trojans are one of the best teams in the group of five leagues, and they're potent. They have a former SEC offensive coordinator, Neil Brown, their head coach, and with a super high, fast tempo, option offense and spread option, and like to get it out there. So it's going to be fun. There's going to be some challenges on the schedule, and looking forward to see what the Panthers can put together.
Ben, an interesting thing about Georgia State last season was how good they were on the road, going to Coastal Carolina, beating the Chanticleers, going to Texas State, going to Louisiana Monroe. But as good as they were on the road, they had a little trouble at home. What if anything is Sean Elliott trying to do to address that?
Yeah, I actually asked him about that on media day. He understood how critical it is to win at home, just to pay off the fans that come out. Georgia State football has had struggles gravitating and grabbing the alums and fans of the program and generating that. And they do show up. They are not paid off with the win. And I saw that last year against Tennessee State, of course, homecoming against Troy as well. That's been a focus. I think Coach Elliott is looking to continue to motivate these guys and really let them know, look, this is your stadium. This is where, you live, you work out. Certainly locker rooms being built there. They hang out more time there in the football facility. To have some pride in winning at home, I think that's part of it. And honestly, just being able to execute. There was a ton of issues with turnovers and turnover margin. We saw that in the opener last year against Tennessee State. They turned the ball over four times, and if you count a missed fourth down conversion, that's a fifth opportunity for another team to beat you there. So that's been the biggest thing is execution, just continuing to be sharp. The last two Saturdays have been very strong on the practice field. The team is looking very strong and ready for the season, quite honestly. As someone told me, they're tired of hitting each other. They're tired of seeing the same jersey on every side. They're ready to get and attack somebody else for a change, and that starts on Thursday night.
Well, I want to go into the roster just a little bit. Ari Wirtz, he transferred. He went to East Tennessee State, but you still got Penny Hart wearing the Panther blue. Is he going to be one of those sleeper talents in the Sun Belt and maybe the nation as a whole?
Yeah, definitely. And the biggest thing that I've seen out of Penny is just continue to work on route running and continue to, get stronger that way. He's a guy that is a top flight wide receiver, not just in the group of five or in the Sun Belt, one of the top statistical wide receivers in the country and really impressive on how he maintains his body. And he mentioned earlier in the month, this is really the first camp that he's come in being really healthy, feeling like he been able to go full go and full tilt. And he's a guy that is going to present matchup problems, and teams are going to have to double team him. I think the biggest thing ultimately is, you've added two SEC transfers to the offensive side of the ball as well. So you double Penny, you got opportunities for other guys on the roster to get loose, and this offense is going to look vastly improved, I believe, in 2018.
And real quick, Ben, on the defense side, is there an under sleeper talent on that end that Georgia State fans should watch out for?
You know, the first guy that, Coach Elliott talked about was Dante Wilson, nose guard. He's a sophomore out of Jefferson, big, you know, guy that a little bit, you know, shorter, squattier guy, but an absolute tank and a fire hydrant right there up the middle. It was very slippery. Had four sacks from the nose guard position last year, and taking over now from Julie Laurent, who's in the Canadian Football League. Guy that's, you know, you can really, really set the tone, and certainly will start for the rush defense of Nate Duplay. Was a top 35, you know, rush defense in all of FBS last year. So you're looking to kind of take that next step and move forward and really set the tone for that front seven. I like Dante a lot, and he's got an opportunity to make a big name. And if he can continue to progress, continue to get stronger and bigger, and just keep his speed, he's going to be trouble for the interior line there.
All right, Daniel's got one quick question for you.
Ben, just real quick, give me a score. Kennesaw State, Georgia State, give me a score, Ben.
Yeah, I like a 30-14, you know, maybe 28-13, somewhere in that neighborhood. I just think it's going to come down to execution, to way too much offensive talent on the speed on the Georgia State side of things. Tennessee, the biggest thing that I've seen with Kennesaw as it compares, you know, to last year's opener with Tennessee State, they're not SEC caliber athletes on the field at Kennesaw. They do run a very strong offense, but if you do force them in third and six, third and seven opportunities and force them to throw, they don't have a quarterback that's capable of throwing the ball consistently. He's been under 50%. I just think it's too much talent on the Georgia State side of things, and I expect the Panthers to pull out a relatively comfortable home opening win.
All right, Ben, thank you very much for joining us. We hope to have you on throughout the season. Appreciate you joining the last three guys to do a podcast.
You got it. Absolutely. Y'all take care.
All right. All right, that was Ben Moore. And we're going to have John Feiner, who runs the Kennesaw State kind of fan board on Twitter, kind of runs that. So he's going to join us with his perspective on that. And he should be calling us in a matter of moments. So Ben brought up some really good points about this ball game. How basically, there is the talent level that is there. And yes, Kennesaw State does have a program, a philosophy well-suited to what they're trying to do. They're getting the athletes to buy into that and to play that. But Ben's basic point is, you know, there is just a step up between FBS and FCS that is very, very hard to overcome.
And when you add the whole recruiting aspect of things, too.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, but I'm going to ask the KSU coach about that as far as the recruiting. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The recruiting implications of this game is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll hopefully get into that with John. He should be calling us, John Feiner. He should be calling us in a matter of moments. So Daniel got Ben to say Georgia State would win comfortably, 30-14, 28-14. You know, somewhere in there.
So I'm dying to hear what John has to say.
Exactly. You know, the thing of it is, and Ben, I asked Ben about this, you know, Georgia State has had problems playing well at home.
Yes.
And that has been an issue with the program a lot. I think they kind of got started when Tennessee State upended them in the home opener last year, and that just kind of got into their heads.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll be a little closer. I think it's going to be a little closer than what Ben is prognosticating, simply because they're going to have to get out of that mentality, and the only way to do that is to play well. So I think they're going to be a little tight at the beginning, but hopefully they'll be able to overcome that.
Another thing, too, guys, listen, we can't take the triple option for granted, okay? That thing can be, depending on the type of defense that Georgia State will bring out there, they're going to have to be inside, and they're going to have to use that power. That front seven is going to have to really be good.
Okay, and calling in on cue, John Feiner from Kennesaw State. John, are you there?
Yeah. Right here. Thanks for having me, John.
Oh, great! We got you on. All right, John. Before we get you on, describe what the board you write for, because it's not really 247 Sports. It's kind of like a Kennesaw State fan board. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. Just a fan site. I cover the recruiting. You know, we haven't had much going on for the last few weeks or so, so it's been kind of, you know, empty since then. We have a message board, which is kind of, I think, being phased out a little bit, you know, due to Twitter and so much activity there. But we do have some loyal fans on there getting the activity going. And anytime there's an offer in football, I will definitely have it up there as soon as I can so the fans can keep track.
All right. Well, you're on with Daniel Bolton and Leon Brown. I'll start you off the same way I started Ben off. For Georgia State, Kennesaw State, who does it mean more to?
I think it means more to Georgia State. I mean, I think it has to. Obviously, I really want this game because I'm a Kennesaw State fan, of course. Right. But, I mean, when you look at it from a Georgia State perspective, they lost the opener last week to Tennessee State. And if they lose to Kennesaw State, it'll kind of be that, oh, here we go again feel. So that's one reason. And also, you know, Georgia State's the FBS team. They have 20-plus more scholarships. They're supposed to win this game. They're at home. We're a fourth-year program. I think a loss to Kennesaw State would hurt them in recruiting-wise, and just in general, it would make, you know, a lot of people, you know, it would help us recruiting directly against Georgia State. So I'm going to have to say it means more to them.
I would look at it this way. It's kind of the same thing. You hear Georgia State basketball coach Ryan Hunter talk about how no one wants to play him, especially in the state of Georgia. Like Josh Pastner, he only played them for an exhibition because if Georgia Tech wins, yeah, they're supposed to win. But if Georgia State wins, boy, does that set Georgia recruiting up on its ear. It's kind of the same principle, don't you think?
I think we've done a great job recruiting for the last 3-4 years, even since the first class, which is now what we're really relying on this year. You know, to be honest with you, it means a lot to Kennesaw State. I mean, just like you said, it would absolutely help those things. But I do think it's a big game for both sides, but I do think it would help Georgia State more. And also, you got to look at, you know, beyond the stars and beyond, you know, the transfers and who's coming from which FBS school. You know, you just want the best players with the right attitude, the right mindset, and whether those guys have, you know, one offer or whether they have 20 offers, we just got to find the right guys and we'll be where we need to be eventually if we take care of business at the end of the day.
Now, last season, you guys were in the FCS National Playoff. You won. You got to the third round, I think. Third round, I believe. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Third round. And what did that do to your confidence, to the program's confidence, to the team's confidence heading into this season?
I think it's huge. Just getting that big game experience because, you know, Georgia State's probably going to be one of the, you know, the biggest stages that we've been on for a regular season game. So, you know, it's absolutely going to help. You know, showing the resolve to beat Samford last year after losing to them during the regular season, on a terrible call, by the way, and then going in the next week and, you know, beating Jacksonville State on the road. I mean, it just shows great resolve, getting that big game experience. Even in Sam Houston State, we were clobbered, you know, for the first half. You know, it was just one of those games where Sam Houston just felt like they had the upper hand. But at the end of the game, we were within 15 yards of tying it up or winning it. So, you know, we never gave up. And I think that taste in the players' mouths, the returning players, it just makes them that much more hungrier.
Hey, John. This is Daniel.
Daniel.
So, obviously, I don't go to Kennesaw. Never went to Kennesaw State. Never worked for him. So I'm.
He works for Georgia State.
I work for Georgia State, and I'm an alum.
Don't hold that against him.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't hold that against me, okay? But what I want to know is, what is the culture? What has the culture been like at Kennesaw State? I guess since they moved up to the FCS, and now this the football program is starting to become relevant. What has been the culture there? Do you know?
Well, we didn't move up to FCS. This is literally year four on the field. That's about to start. But the culture has always been, you know, from day one, Coach Bohannon, you know, is really selling a vision as opposed to selling a product. And the kids that bought into that right now, I think there's 19 OGs is what they're called, original gangsters, I guess.
Yes.
So I guess the returning OG offensive guards are the OG OGs. But, no, it sounds like, you know, they've really bought into the vision. And this year, they got a taste of it last year, but this year they feel like, you know, they really set the record. They really did what they, you know, that they came to do, and it just opened their eyes, and now they know they have one last chance to really make that final push to make a mark on the school's legacy and build for future classes. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where the fifth-year seniors, we have 19 of them, that's kind of where their head's at, and the coaching staff every year, I think they've brought in more talented players just because there's a product on the field that the coaches were able to point at and say, hey, look, this is what we do. This is how good we can do it. This is how good we can be. And, you know, I think the past year or two, I mean, these guys can be just as good as the original class, if not better, given the time to develop. So we'll have to see. Only time can tell.
Hey, John, Leon here. So,
hey,
how you doing? So do your players understand that, you know, with the upcoming schedule, the recruiting implications that go into having, you know, a somewhat of a decent record this year, you know, like setting a tone for the program at least for the next 4 years?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that question.
You know, as far as your, you know, like your 19 returning players, have they bought into the fact that their performance could possibly set the tone for the program for the next 4 years going forward?
I got you. Yeah, absolutely. That's really, you know, been one of the main driving factors, that they've been through so much. They've been through, you got to think, these guys have been through a whole year together, just practicing, doing nothing on Saturdays, just going through the rituals, learning together, growing together. Exactly. They've already set the standard. Now they have one chance to raise the bar even more, so to speak. I mean, we have our first ever signee was a guy named Chandler Burks, a redheaded kid from South Paulding High School. And now, you know, four or five years later, he's an AP all FCS performer, running the option offense like he's done it all his life. You know, he didn't really have many offers coming out, if any. You know, again, my point is, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, where the stars are. It's a matter of, you know, we have the type of kids that want to push, get better, learn, and perform. And that's really what the first class embodied.
All right.
Well, talking about this game on Thursday night at Georgia State Stadium, John, basically my question for you is, Kennesaw State finished, all right, fill in the blank. Kennesaw State has to blank to win this ball game.
Kennesaw State has to play Kennesaw State football. That's it. Bohannon's motto, the team's motto, has always been effort, attitude, toughness. If they just need to show up, not be intimidated by the environment, which I think we're not going to be because you know we might have more fans there than Georgia State. We don't know yet. We don't know.
Nice.
We'll have to see. But you know, we got to limit our turnovers. Last year we were up there at the top of the FCS in turnovers. We even had the turnover plank, which I'm not sure if you guys have seen.
I remember that.
Yeah,
it's like the turnover chain from Miami, but it's from Ed, and Eddie. So, you know, funny story, actually, the guy that invented or brought the turnover plank originally was a walk-on wide receiver last year, Tanner Jones. He actually just converted to cornerback this year. And I think that's just so he has a chance to hold his own plank. So I'm not sure, but really, you know, we just gotta not turn it over. I think it's gonna be a close game. I really think that it's gonna be a one possession game, and it's gonna come down to the end. I'm not crazy enough to say I think Kennesaw State wins. I'm not crazy enough to say that.
Okay.
But I would be shocked if either team, you know, was in the place in the fourth at any time in the fourth quarter beyond maybe the last 30 seconds where they can pull their starters.
Give me the name of a sleeper person either anywhere on your roster who will have a game that will have a good game that nobody will expect.
Oh, that's a really good question. We have so many. The offensive side of the ball is we just have so many returning, you know, juniors and seniors that's tough to answer because, you know, next year there'll be a million new guys that will get an opportunity. But, you know, we're returning about 9 of 10 offensive starters. The defense is a little bit more open. But if I had to, you know, pick a name, I would say Travis Bell. He's a redshirt freshman defensive lineman from Alabama. I think it's Jefferson Davis High School. Don't quote me on that. Dude is a strong player. You know, he hasn't hit the field yet, but I'm very excited to see what he can do along with some of our other redshirt freshmen like Evan Reese, defensive end, had some offer, you know, was almost going to Tulane. We have some dudes on defense, and Sincere Mason, he's kind of like a linebacker safety hybrid, can really hit. Probably would have gone to a higher level if he didn't get an injury in high school. So, you know, we have a lot of dudes on defense that could break out this year, and just like last year with Bryson Armstrong.
And Coach Bohannon, triple option guy, right?
Yep.
Here's the thing about the triple option. Paul Johnson has just been, if you read the press, he's excoriated for simply being wedded too much to the triple option. Do you see a time where Coach Bohannon, will he try to diversify it a little bit, or is he going to be a triple option guy tried and true?
I mean, triple option is what he does. You know, he throws it a little bit more than maybe a traditional triple option than you'd think. You know, year one and two, we didn't really have a quarterback that can get the, you know, that can push the ball a little bit. But now, you know, Chandler Burks, he doesn't have a rocket arm, but he can make the necessary throws. He plays smart. The coaches, the coaches trust him. And, you know, we can throw it if we have to. We're not going to be some kind of precision offense, you know, nailing bullets on the, you know, on precision slants. But we can get the ball down the field if we have to. We have a wide receiver, Justin Sumter. The dude, I'm sure you've seen him on SportsCenter. Dude can go up and get those one-handed fades, bring them down. He'll definitely be a player that's going to get some, at least at minimum, some tryouts next year from NFL teams. So, you know, we could definitely push it. We're just looking to see, you know, if any other wide receivers want to break out on the other side.
All right, I think we're going to have to leave it there. John Finer from KSUHowl.com, I think I got that right?
KSUHowl.com.
OwlHowl.com, that's right, I missed the owl. Thank you very much for joining us. We will check in with you throughout the season, if that's okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to be on again, actually, after the game to kind of talk about what went down.
All right,
well, we'll see what happens. We can't make any promises, but we will see what we will try to take you up on that. Thank you very much.
Look forward to hearing from you
sometime. Take care, guys.
All right, that was John Finer from KSUOwlHowl.com talking to us about the Georgia State-Kennesaw State game. He followed up Ben Moore. And like I said, the thing I got from that is Kennesaw State is going into this. They know it's an uphill battle. I think a lot of what they're saying is they're just trying to rile the fans that they know that it's going to be very difficult for them to win this football game, but not impossible.
Yeah, the elephant in the room, though, you know, because at the same time, you know, Kennesaw State is about 4 years old, Georgia State is 9 years old, and football years is about the same age. That's not really the, you know, we're talking about in the eyes of much older teams.
We're talking about the Alabamas.
Right. So they're kind of like still in that momentum stage, you know, trying to get the relevancy up. But the elephant in the room is the recruiting. This has powerful implications for the recruiting classes of these two universities, which can determine relevancy for the next years to come.
I can agree with you on that one. You know, I think what we've seen in the last couple of years in college football, because it can't happen, you know, and just how John spoke about it so, what's the word I'm looking for? He was ready.
Yes.
He's ready for this game. Like, Georgia State doesn't scare Kennesaw State.
Right.
Now, when you get out there and you play the game, Appalachian State proved that to us years ago when they went to the Big House and they beat Michigan.
Mm.
You know, all of that is done. All of the FCS versus FBS talk is done. Okay, yeah, of course, Georgia State's expected to win this game, but that option out offense, that triple option offense, can give teams problems.
Absolutely.
I've seen it give teams problems. And it doesn't matter who you are, FCS, FBS, NAIA, that's what you are. The triple option gives teams problems because it beats you up. It beats the defense up. You have a 10 to 12 play drive, and you're running the football on that team. that's what tears a defense down. So if Georgia State better watch themselves. They better watch themselves against this Kennesaw State team, because they're coming in with so much confidence and absolutely nothing to lose in this game.
And that's the scariest opponents right there.
Exactly.
Well, the only problem with the triple option offense is it's great when you're ahead.
Yeah.
Not so good when you're behind.
Not when you're behind, John, and also in third and long situations.
Right.
Now you have to pass the football.
Right.
You can't, see, what Kennesaw can't allow, what Georgia State can't allow them to do is be in a third and short situation.
Right.
Then now all they can do is run. If they keep them in a third and 10 and beyond, then it might be an easier game for them.
Especially with Kennesaw State's quarterback having an under 50% completion rate on third and long situations. That could, you know.
You know, I guess this is a segue to talking into our other schools here in Georgia, since this is our college football brief special. I really see some things happening with Kennesaw State this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can get back to where they were last year. They were in the semis last year. Georgia State won a bowl game this year, got, what, 6 wins, I believe?
Seven and five. Because they won the bowl game for the first time.
Yeah, won the first bowl game. So I believe that that as far as Georgia State goes, I believe they can get up there and they can Sunbelt, you know.
No, it's going to be difficult because you've got Troy, App State,
and those two games on the road. I think they have to really watch out for. But remember, they were a great road team last year.
They were, and that's a whole issue about, you know, why Georgia State was so good on the road and so subpar at home. That was the whole problem. And we were trying to get Coach Elliott to say what is the reason. And you know, when you're on the road, you can control things a lot more. You can control when your team gets up, where they go to eat, when they go to bed. You get their phones. Home, you're going to have those distractions. But it should not be as bad as it was.
Right. And I get that one. Let's segue into
college football had probably the most tumultuous offseason in recent history. And, boy, we had a week from last week. We should be focusing on who's going to win, but instead we're focusing more on the situation up in Columbus, Ohio, with Urban Meyer, with his situation. And if you can get Urban Meyer anything for Christmas, I'd recommend a good PR firm. Because it just seemed like he was doing everything wrong. And he's still going to hold his job, even though he will not coach the first 3 games of the season.
What I want to know from you guys is this. First, because there's a lot to talk about with this whole situation. First off, his initial press conference was absolutely terrible. Okay, from that standpoint, he never apologized to the victim himself, which was Courtney Smith, which is the ex-wife of Zach Smith, who was
right.
a part of the domestic violence situation. But what's the suspension, the type of suspension he got? He's going to miss 3 games. He's going to miss TCU, Oregon State, and Rutgers.
Right.
Which they're probably going to come out 3-0. And he gets the practice.
And TCU's at the end of that. It's Oregon State first, then conference game with Rutgers, which really doesn't count as a conference game because it's Rutgers.
Yeah.
And then it's and then Texas Christian, which might give them some fits.
Yeah, they will.
I
believe they will. My question to you guys is, should it have been longer or should he have been fired?
I think because of the tone deafness of his response to it, it should have been a lot more than what he got.
Yeah.
Simply because he was showing more loyalty to his assistant for these guys have been together through thick and thin for the last 20 years. You know, they had gone through multiple stops together. So that is pretty much why no one is believing what he's saying about how he didn't know.
And mind you, too, that Zach Smith's grandfather was also a mentor of Urban Meyer.
Right.
Obligated to do it.
There's no question that he acted out of loyalty. There's no question of that. And we like people who are loyal to the people that they've come up with. But, you know, but what Zach Smith did, and I don't think there's any doubt that he is guilty of this. It's just, and the way the culture has set itself, because let's face it, the culture today is much different than what it was, not so much 10 years ago, but 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, the culture is just tremendously different. And I also think Urban Meyer has not been able to acknowledge that.
Exactly.
And yes, so yes, the it should have been It should have been more. He should have gotten at least four or five, or maybe even. And there is going to be some pressure on him to be fired. And that's the thing. This is going to be like, I don't want to call it a Joe Paterno situation, but it's almost along that. If Urban Meyer thinks this is going away, he's crazy. I mean, this is not going away. I don't remember where I heard this from. I don't remember where I heard this. So don't quote me because I read it somewhere. I just can't remember. Like every person was saying that every press conference now is, well, coach, that was a great win about Penn State, but let's talk about Courtney Smith. I mean, you know, it's going to be something. He's going to hear it from everybody.
And he better be ready.
He's got to acknowledge it. It's like, look, my response was tepid. It was dumb. It made it seem like I don't care about what happened to Courtney Smith. I do care. I'm truly sorry, you know. But basically, short of resigning, his critics are not going to be satisfied until he resigns. And the sooner that Urban realizes this, the better.
Yeah. Well, do we believe that 73-8 has anything to do with Urban Meyer's three-game suspension?
Oh, question. I mean, I was about to get into that.
Yeah, and I put a tweet out on it at johnmorgo.com. I said, if he was 0-6 versus Michigan, would we even be having this conversation?
Right.
This conversation.
If he's a coach of, like, a lesser stature, his career had just been over with. I mean, he probably been he may have been coaching Little League or Pop Warner.
Yeah, he would have
high school.
If not even high school, they'd be like, no, can't have it. You know, it sets a bad example.
Right.
But 73-8, slated to make $77.6 million, and I'm pretty sure, not to throw in a tinfoil hat, but when you think of Ohio State, we don't think of NCAA basketball.
No.
We think that's a football powerhouse.
That's a football factory, yes. And as long, basically, what's going to happen is, as long as he keeps getting the recruits, he's going to be there. If the recruiting starts drying up, if people pass, if he doesn't no longer get 3 or 4 star recruits, and I was looking at the George, when I'm doing my research for my high school games, I'm looking around and I'm seeing all the recruits, and he's still getting some quality recruits from this state, mind you.
Absolutely.
He's still getting them.
Never been investigated either.
Yeah.
No foul play.
If those start drying up, then the administration, they'll pull the plug.
I'm going to say this, and then we can go into our predictions, Heisman winners, playoffs, and all of that stuff. This whole thing, stemming from the evidence and the investigation that the university put on, all the way up to Urban Meyer's, all the way up to the decision that they made to suspend Urban Meyer, the Board of Trustees, all the way up to Urban Meyer's press conference right afterwards, tells me exactly what we've been saying, Leon. Winning is more important than issues that we have today. Winning is more important. That's what this whole thing told me.
But we knew that.
I know.
We knew, and it's just been blasted on a neon sign. We knew that. It was kind of it was a dirty secret, yeah. But now it's an open secret.
Now it's open.
Because we're talking about Urban, he has almost a 90%. He wins 9 out of 10 games. He's going to win.
Right.
So it's like, ooh, if you're Ohio State, I mean, this isn't as ugly of a suspension as that what we've seen of, you know, and I hate to bring such an ugly incident up, but the Ray Rice situation of a couple of years ago, you know, where he was only issued, I think, three games, you know, and it's safe to say that what kind of makes this a little more egregious is the fact that this is a 20-year friend of Urban Meyer. Father mentor Urban Meyer, so we kind of know you knew something.
Yeah.
You knew something.
And don't give me that bull that his wife Shelly didn't know that. Listen, I'm married, okay? And we have pillow talk.
Yeah.
Right? You can't tell me out of the 20 some odd years you've been married to Shelly Meyer, that you guys didn't have pillow talk. She did not come to you tell you about Courtney's situation.
Right.
That's blasphemous.
Yeah.
I sound like Stephen A.
It is.
Yes.
You can't be serious. You can't be kidding me to know that. You've had pillow talk, okay? I don't care how, where you've been on recruit trips, whatever, you still come home to your wife. And I know that you guys have had a discussion about that. So it just, all of this is just ridiculous. I think he should have gotten more. I think he should have been suspended by the Big Ten. I'm sorry, as far as Big Ten games go, you know, because those are the games that are really going to matter with them getting to the college football playoff. Because he's in a tough division himself.
Absolutely.
With Michigan and who else is in his division?
TCU?
No, his division.
Michigan State.
TCU.
Penn State. No.
We're talking about his division of the Big Ten.
Okay, gotcha.
Ohio State division.
Maryland, I think, is in there. Nebraska.
Indiana, Nebraska. Nebraska's in the West.
Oh, Nebraska's in the West. All right, yeah. Purdue then.
Yeah, they're in Wisconsin's bracket. Okay. So, I mean, you look at those teams, then it's like, because they have early games. They have early games, and they have early matchups with Penn State and Michigan State. So, if I was them, I would have suspended him at least 6 games. Counting some of those Big Ten games.
Like, being that it is going to affect your program. Mm-hmm. Like, these 3 games have not really, it's in the grand scheme, will not affect their W's and L's.
They could go 3-0.
Absolutely.
These games, yeah. at the least 2-1, and they could struggle against TCU.
So they definitely handled this with kid gloves, yeah. As we're saying.
Yeah, well, yeah, they definitely did. I mean, they definitely did. And they kind of, you know, they kind of like said, yeah, he, you know, no one really bought the explanation they gave him. No one really did. And that's the whole thing. And it's just another example, as Daniel said, of colleges putting winning first. And there's so many that we can point to. And, you know, you have the North Carolina shoe situation. And remember Jim Tressel, he must be wondering what does he have to do? Terrell Pryor had the tattoos, and Tressel got fired for it. So
exactly.
And
one more thing too, guys. And then we'll move on. There were 8 UNC players who just recently got suspended for 4 games for selling their shoes.
Right. Oh wow!
Come on.
Yeah.
Well, I think that kind of leads into a larger issue, though.
Yeah,
we could talk about this forever because they're playing North Carolina, those 4 games, California, East Carolina, both those on the road. Oh, this could be one with the national champion Central Florida Knights, and then Pittsburgh's the other one.
And Central Florida happens to be that team I think is going to break through again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like I said, going into this, I mean, what we should be talking about right now is how great that Georgia-Alabama game last January was, and will we see that again this season? Like in the SEC, will it be Georgia, will it be Alabama to come out and represent either in the national championship game or in the SEC?
Well, let's get into that, man. Let's break down our Power 5 conference winners. How about that?
All right.
Started off Big 12. Let's start with the Big 12. I like West Virginia.
Really?
Over TCU. Yeah, I do. Listen, I believe the Big 12 probably has the best quarterback coming back in Will Greer.
Okay.
So I believe that them and that high octane offense again, and I'm telling you, I believe this will be an explosive Big 12 championship. Yes, Oklahoma gets left out. Listen, Kyler Murray will be in at quarterback for Oklahoma, but and he has a lot of shoes to fill. You lose the Heisman Trophy winner Baker Mayfield, but they're still going to be a very good team. But I think somehow, some way, West Virginia over TCU in the Big 12 championship.
Wow. I like Sean Robinson. I like the dual threat. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
Well, like you said, Oklahoma is. Yes, they lose Baker Mayfield, but you know you're going to have Kyler Murray coming back for Oklahoma. It's going to be his team now to lead the Sooners.
Yeah, my opinion. Let's see. I'm gonna have my opinion finalized by Sean Robinson after the Ohio State game.
Okay.
You know, if he performs well against Ohio State, which has a big implication for Ohio State as well, then I'll be sold. But you know, for right now, I'm running with Sean Robinson right now.
All right. Well, you know, it's very hard. It's very hard to go against Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Very hard. And they got another. And believe me, they got another great team up there. But they do have an interesting schedule. Again, Florida Atlantic with Lane Kiffin and then UCLA.
Yeah.
So that's going to be it. We'll see how they look going out of that. And I think Iowa State might be a sleeper team.
Yeah, yeah.
Matt Campbell could be one of those. Another good season for Matt Campbell in Iowa State, and he'll be a very sought-after coach next offseason.
I give you my sleeper team. I think you can never count out Oklahoma State.
Right.
And Mike Gundy and the job that he's doing over there, I would not count them out as well. I think they'll be a sleeper team as well. The Big Ten. All right, so I have Michigan over Wisconsin. I think that with everything that's going on with Urban Meyer and Ohio State, this would be a great time for Jim Harbaugh to break through and beat Ohio State. And he's going to have to beat them to get to the Big Ten championship.
Absolutely.
Wisconsin's
yes.
going to run over the West. I think they'll get there, but I think the Michigan Wolverines with Shea Patterson and quarterback, they have dynamic receiving core. I think the Michigan Wolverines defeat Wisconsin. They win the Big Ten.
Is Jim Harbaugh on the hot seat?
I think he is.
I think he is.
If he does not beat Ohio State, he may get fired.
He's 0-6.
Yes.
And Jim Harbaugh has not, I'm sorry, Jim Harbaugh has not impressed me as a coach who can win a big game.
Right.
I mean,
I think that this has to be the year. That's why I'm picking Michigan to win the Big Ten.
Yeah, he has a lot on. He's once again, he's in a situation where he kind of has everything to lose.
And he's got a tough game starting out at Notre Dame.
The game day crew will be there.
Yeah, so that's gonna be awesome.
And then last year's situation with 5 losses.
Yeah,
that had to been
crazy losses. Weren't the was the one.
What was it, Michigan State?
What was the Michigan State punt one, wasn't it? Yeah, exactly.
That he has to get over that. All of those losses he had, he's got to keep out of his head.
I'm surprised he doesn't. I'm surprised he doesn't have a handprint on top of his forehead. Like just.
Like I said, Jim Harbaugh's gonna have to prove to me that he can coach. But I really don't want to say, I think Ohio State's going to have way too many distractions to deal with this season. So maybe this is the year for a Michigan State to come through. Michigan State could come through. This might be the year that they're able to overcome that. But I believe you're right about Wisconsin. I think they're going to roll through the West.
Yeah.
And I have them rolling out of the Big Ten.
Out of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Okay, good. You have a prediction?
Mario is going to the SEC. I'm predicting, this is a bit of a stretch. I'm almost like a homer. But, it's easy to go with Alabama. I'm going to run with Georgia. I think last year was, I've seen this happen with another team.
So
from
running with Georgia.
I'm running with Georgia out of the SEC.
Okay.
New quarterback and everything. Okay. Dual threat quarterback. I like them. Mm-hmm. I believe, they remind me.
He's going to start, though. Marcus Fields. You're talking about Fields. Justin Fields,
who he's talking to.
I believe he can emerge.
Well, it'll be the same thing that we saw last year, where Eason went down and Fromm came up strong and never.
He still got to get past Fromm.
Let's be honest, the performance that he put on during the championship game was very telling. Mm-hmm. And is there going to be a quarterback competition this year? If I'm from, based on the performance they put on during the championship game, then for them to bring in a superstar freshman like that.
Well, they've always had Fields recruited. I think Fields committed to them very early on.
Right. So, he's going to have to show up. But based on whoever emerges out of which I'm picking Fields, but whoever emerges out of that QB controversy, I believe will determine if Georgia emerges out of the SEC.
But you think they will?
I think it's possible. I believe it is possible.
Okay. I disagree. I think they'll win the SEC East. I think they should roll over the SEC.
Absolutely.
East.
Oh, yes. I'm looking at their schedule. I mean, Austin Peay will have a tough game. Let's just say a telling game at South Carolina.
And that's going to be their game. That's going to tell.
Yeah, because then look at what's going on after that. MTSU, Missouri, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. You're going to roll right through September until that October 13th game at LSU. And then it gets a little tricky because then you got Florida, Kentucky, Auburn, UMass, and Tech.
Exactly.
And once they get past Auburn, then it's another easy.
It's another easy story.
Right.
So, as long as Nick Saban is coaching Alabama, you could never count them out.
Yeah.
And I believe Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship game. I think, I don't know if they roll over them, but it's just like Georgia. Alabama is, I mean, to even get to the playoffs, you know I have Alabama as the final.
Right, right.
Now, they're going to get a pass. Now, Alabama's only problem that I see is probably a great problem. They're going to have to figure out, is it going to be Hurts or is it going to be the Tua kid.
Yeah, Tua, yeah.
Togova, last name, the T. They're going to call him TT.
Right,
right.
Tua, you know what I'm saying? That, which is a great thing to have, you know. I think if I was to look at Alabama's schedule, there are three games that you could possibly be worried about. And you guys might be surprised here, but this game coming up.
Oh, Louisville. Yeah, that's not going to be easy.
That's not going to be an easy game. And I know Louisville's lost a lot of players over the years, but they still have one of the best coaches in football, by Trino. So, and I think that that could be an issue. They can get past that. I think they'll be fine. Another team that you may want to look out for, and a team that is on everybody's radar, is Mississippi State.
Okay.
That team may cause Alabama some problems.
That's, yeah,
and of course LSU, you know, that's a given. So Auburn, I think Auburn is ranked too high. To be honest with you, I'm not really sold on them. Maybe it's because of Stidwell. I think Stidwell is returned as their quarterback. So I'm not really sold on Auburn yet. I can't really say that I like them, but you know, only time will tell.
They lost a lot of weight on offense.
Well, no, because you know, Kerryon Johnson's no longer there, so Stedham's going to have to do it by himself.
Yeah, and Cameron Pettaway's gone.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So Alabama, John, who you have?
Well, like I said, until you got to go with Alabama because I mean, honestly, Nick Saban, he walks down the street, he kicks sand in the under five star recruits.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they just gravitate to him because the five star recruits want what Nick can give them, and that's a ring. That's four rings. So of course he's. I mean, until someone proves me differently, you got to go with Alabama. And to be honest, now that we're getting into this, Dabo Sweeney at Clemson, he's getting very close to being kind of like an Alabama over there. Clemson's going to be very difficult. We're getting to the point where we're penciling in Alabama and Clemson before the season even starts. And I think this year we should do the same.
Absolutely. Let's jump into the ACC. John, you have Clemson?
Yes.
Okay. Leon?
Clemson.
Clemson. All right. I don't.
You don't.
I'm going to pick the upset here I believe in them. I think Miami beats Clemson in the ACC championship game.
Really?
Yes. Oh, wow.
I think, but it's not going to affect Clemson. It's not going to affect Clemson at all. I think Clemson will roll through their schedule. They'll beat Florida State. They'll beat everybody who's on it. I think Miami will have trouble against Florida State. I think they may lose that game at home. But that will be the only loss they have going into the ACC championship game. I think they shot Clemson and they win the ACC.
So you think Travis Homer is going to make that much of a step up?
I think so. I think he's going to have to. Listen, I know the quarterback situation with Dozier,
mm-hmm.
I believe his name is. Dozier is like a big problem. You know, he wasn't consistent last year, but I think he's going to step up. I think he's going to get a lot better. I think he's going to lead them the way. But when you look at Miami, you're looking at Miami of old. And I know that's a big statement, but that defense, if that defense can be led by Shaq Quarterman, if that defense can be just like Miami football, if they can get back to looking like the Canes, the U, they're going to be a problem for a lot of teams, and I think they can be a problem for Clemson. Now, let's just say this. Clemson is, they have the best front four in college football. Probably the best front four we have ever seen. So, we'll see what happens here. I like Miami over Clemson. I like Miami over Clemson in that one. Alright, real quick, Pac-12. I have a shocker again. I have Utah over Washington. I think Utah's the only team in the country that's bringing back a quarterback, a running back, their quarterback from last year, their running back from last year, their coach from last year, and their two top coordinators. So, I think, that being said, I think Utah may shock Washington. So I like Utah to come out of the Pac-12.
It's been a very quiet offseason in the Pac-12 this season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Great coaching carousel.
Yeah, usually you get a coaching carousel. Usually you get some sort of offseason drama, but not this season. No, it's very quiet, and I think it's a nice, refreshing change for the Pac-12.
Yeah, well, what you're seeing there now is new coaches. There, Herm Edwards got the Arizona State job. Chip Kelly is back in college football. He's with UCLA, which is going to be an interesting matchup coming week one against Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma. So that's going to be an interesting step. Oregon upgraded Mario Cristobal as their head coach. So that's going to be kind of an interesting thing, but I think at the end of the day, I think Utah wins the Pac-12.
Well, they have to get through Washington. And imagine Jake Browning is still their quarterback.
Yeah.
He's like a 3-year quarterback. The guy's like bread. He's dependable but not very sexy.
And they have probably the most dynamic player in college football in Myles Gaskin.
Right.
So he can do a lot of things.
And let's hope that Washington doesn't look past Utah, cuz you know, I believe their largest game this year, which is going to have major implications, is when they play against the SEC.
Well, you figure Auburn. That Washington, that Utah game is right off the bat, September 15th.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's very early, and that should be the game day game that week.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Let's hope they don't leap past that, because I'm pretty sure they have Auburn circled on their schedule. You know, so it's like, okay, we're focused on Auburn, but you do have Utah, which is who is down the street.
Right, but they're going to have a game with North Dakota to kind of ease into that Utah game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see Herm Edwards at Arizona State.
Yeah, I think that's
is he going to – remember when Nick Saban tried to coach the pros? Remember when Jimmy Johnson tried to coach the pros? Well, Jimmy Johnson might be a little different.
He's different, yeah.
But
Nick Saban is a great example, though.
Yeah, and also Herm Edwards, I mean, when was the last – he hasn't coached in what? 10 years?
It's been a while.
So you got to figure that this game has gone way beyond what he's been used to. Yeah. Although with ESPN, he is still kind of got a pulse on it just a little bit. But still, it's going to be very interesting to see what Arizona State has to do. And let's be honest, the Sun Devils haven't been relevant in college football since the days of Frank Cush.
Yeah.
I mean, since he was pushing his players back in the '70s.
Yeah. So that means it's an opportunity.
Yeah, and they start off with Texas San Antonio and Michigan State. That'll be a very interesting game that we're all going to have to watch. So, we're getting close to wrapping up here. Do you guys let's talk a little bit about the Heisman, because this race is so wide open. There is not one name that you can pick at and say, yep, this is the guy who's going to win it all.
It's going to be probably one of the closest races in history, but as I walked into the door, I made my decision. I think it's going to be Khalil Tate from Arizona. This guy, if you have not seen Khalil Tate, you guys may have to watch him. Sometimes it's going to be hard for us on the East Coast, time to watch him because he plays for Arizona. But this guy here is a threat at quarterback. He can throw the ball and he can run the ball. I think Khalil Tate is going to be a numbers guy. He's going to put up some Lamar Jackson-esque numbers, which is why I think he'll be hoisting the Heisman Trophy.
Okay, so you're going to Arizona for... Let's see. I'm going to run with Bryce Love.
Oh, yeah. That's a good pick.
Yeah.
That's a good pick.
Yeah.
That's a good pick from Stanford.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you're both going West Coast.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Both going West Coast. Well, I got to admit, this is a very interesting race, as you said, Daniel. It's very close, but at the end of the day, you got to go with one of your top. If you really have no idea who you want to take, and I really don't at this juncture. That's how wide open it is. I mean, I'm probably, if he stays quarterback, if he's still Bama's quarterback, Jalen Hurts.
Oh wow, Jalen Hurts.
If he's still Bama's quarterback, because we don't, as Leon was saying, you know. Will the Tua get some snaps? What's Nick Saban going to do? But if Jalen Hurts stays as the quarterback, this guy's got a 26-2 record.
Yeah, that's
and that's very, very hard to argue against, especially as we get into this season.
Real quick, playoffs, who are your top four teams, and who's going to win it all?
Well, I don't want to betray my pick that I made earlier.
Okay.
So I'm running with Georgia. Mm-hmm. We're going to run with... You know, of course, the New England Patriots of college football. You know, that's obvious.
Georgia, Alabama.
I want to say, you know, let's hope that Ohio State doesn't let this nonsense get the better of them. And I'm going to run with Ohio State. And, you know, then we're going to go to the ACC. And I'm going to run with the obvious guys.
Clemson.
You know, let's be honest. I think Clemson can run it all. Mm-hmm. I think Clemson can win it all for the same reason that the New York Giants won the Super Bowl in 2007.
Yeah.
And that's that front four.
Yeah.
You know, I believe you can have a very dynamic quarterback. You have a dual receiving threat and everything like that. But if that front four is on those heels in 3 seconds, that could be the determining factor of who wins it all.
All right, John, who you got?
Well, we're going to go really quick. I'm going to say Alabama, Clemson. I'm going to go with Wisconsin. And I will go with Washington.
Who's your champion?
I got to go with Clemson.
All right, Clemson. Okay, I got Alabama, Clemson, Michigan. I think Michigan breaks through, and Miami because they won the ACC. And I think at the end of the day, it's just too much Nick Saban, too much Alabama. Alabama over Clemson.
All right, that's going to – all right. Three bold picks. Well – so you're just going to have to write those down?
Not mine, it's me.
The beautiful part about this podcast is it will be available. It will be up in perpetuity, so you can go back, listen to us, and we'll just see how wrong we are back in December and January when everything settles. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening. We want to thank Ben Moore, John Finer from joining in, giving us their opinions. So we'll be back with you next week for
Leon.
Daniel.
I'm John Morgo. We are the last three guys to do a podcast, and we'll be with you very soon. So thank you very much, and have a good night, everybody.